And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And today we will be venturing out of the universe we know, both literally and figuratively. As you may know, this is the week when Prometheus, another movie taking place in the alien universe, comes out. So we're going to talk about extraterrestrials of all kinds, the good ones, the bad ones, and the ones where, frankly, you just kind of can't tell. Then we're going to talk about more figurative exploration. We'll be talking about things that are not exactly in our traditional wheelhouses, but we love them anyway. And as always, we will close the show by talking about what is making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I am the movies editor for NPR.org.
And holy cow, sitting over here, Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website once more.
Now that you have...
Written a book. Let's not do this again. Handed in the draft. That's the first step. Many more steps to come. Now, instead of whinging about the fact that I'm writing a book, I'll be whining about how my editor is a pig, ignorant Philistine who doesn't
takes
understand.
Out your best jokes.
Exactly.
In my experience, the first thing you will experience is a long silence in which they do not actually open the draft of your book.
Good.
Well, that's wonderful.
I'm looking forward to
You were in a panic to file it on time, and they gave you like 8 false deadlines. Guarantee it.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we are incredibly happy to have you back on the show this week, and I will be very happy to have you once again writing about books and comic books on the NPR website. Yay. I am going to be all over you about that very soon. All right. So this week is the debut of Prometheus. As I mentioned, Prometheus is directed by Ridley Scott, and it is another movie taking place in the universe that gave you Alien, Alien Cubed.
And Alien Resurrection.
And, of course, Alien versus Predator.
Sure.
And Alien versus Mothra,
that's right.
I think. And a couple of other movies.
Alien meets Frankenstein.
Yeah, I actually have seen Prometheus.
Quick question. Are you the only person at this table who has seen it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Would you like to be the person who tells us if it's any good?
I actually really enjoyed it. It's not the thing I'm going to pick for
watching,
not in my
watching
wheelhouse,
people get
but I like it.
Watching people get disemboweled by aliens is not your wheelhouse.
I'm not really a big monster in the guts kind of person to refer to earlier, of course,
acid
films.
Blood.
But I do like the occasional extraterrestrial film, so that's what we thought we would talk about this week. So the first thing that came to my mind when we were trying to formulate this topic is that you have, of course, in your alien universe, you have your kind of menacing aliens.
Your hostiles.
Right? Your hostiles. Mm-hmm.
There's a taxonomy of aliens. There are aliens who are lost. There are aliens who are here to help us.
Right.
There are aliens who are here to eat us.
Right.
And there are aliens who appear to be here to help us, but who are really here to eat us.
Well, and I would argue...
Well, and also the misunderstood...
But that's aliens who are lost.
And I would argue, though, that there are also aliens who would be here to just live peacefully, but because of the way we treat them...
Oh, man.
Then they decide to eat us.
That is true.
Well, okay. So I broke it
down
into...
There are aliens who are just wounded,
District
hurt
9.
Creatures.
Sure,
see,
exactly.
District 9.
So I put... We should really just have put a taxonomy. I broke it down into hostiles, friendlies, and indifference. And I find myself more drawn to the indifference because the idea that the universe...
I'm shocked.
Well, the idea that the universe is a vast, busy place where we are but insignificant specks and the universe won't care when we go on is a very
Glenn's
comforting
bad.
Thought
so,
to me.
Give me an example of indifference.
I always go back to the Vogons from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's not necessarily evil. They're bureaucrats. They come along to destroy the planet Earth to make way for a hyperspace bypass. The fact that they don't care and the story starts with the destruction of Earth, as I always really kind of jibe with me. The fact that they torture their prisoners by reading them their bad poetry, as somebody who taught high school creative writing, also really jibed with me. The other one we can't really get away without talking about in this segment, of course, is Marvin the Martian. Another shout out to a WB.
Wow.
Another shout out to a WB character because, again, he is indifferent. He is
destroying the Earth because it's obstructing my view of Venus.
so that again, that's
but filled with delight.
But mostly, we're talking hostiles versus friendlies. Your classic would be E.T., of course, as a friendly,
right?
Somebody who is lost, as Trey mentioned.
But see, my argument is, if E.T. stayed around, he would just get mad, grow into a surly teenager, and eventually turn on us.
I can't argue with that premise.
I mean, honestly, if you want to
see that
actually. If you had been treated as he was treated, wouldn't you be angry?
Stuffed into a closet with other stuffed animals.
Well, you know, if we're gonna devise a taxonomy, I think we also need to figure out what the respective metaphors are. Mm-hmm. Because when you're talking about the bureaucrats in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, part of what is being said is that all living things are sort of fundamentally petty in some way.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And that you know, Marvin the Martian blowing up Earth to improve his view, there are certainly things being said about the parallels to humanity. And mm-hmm. I think that when you're talking about hostiles and friendlies, you know, a lot of it is designed to sort of provide some sort of commentary, obviously, more on humanity. And
right.
So the mindset that is going into each of those taxonomies is clearly saying something about humanity. And I think the fact that you favor the indifference, you know, I kind of, as I'm looking down, you know, things like contact, you know, where the mm-hmm. the aliens have something to teach us and, you know, everything. And that movie ultimately...
2001, too.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Contact, in particular, has a very, very warm message to impart about, you know, while humanity behaves in incredibly petty ways in that movie, and that she's sort of up against this giant, unthinking, unfeeling bureaucracy of blah, 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 you know, and really they're keeping her from learning how to love. You know, I, as a liker of people, you know, tend to be a fan of you know, the movies where the aliens and sort of thus the universe at large is a friendly and warm place.
Right. So what do you think of Close Encounters? Because technically that's a friendly, right? They come down mm-hmm. and everybody's so happy. Mm-hmm. But they kidnapped hundreds of people. And then at the end, there's some music and everybody's crying and they're doing that weird, creepy finger sex.
Right.
And we're supposed to forgive them for kidnapping all these people.
They're new here.
No.
They don't know that's not how we do it.
Right. Right. They just think maybe it's a vacation.
Well,
sure.
Okay, here's the thing. I mean, I agree with Stephen that what is really interesting about the way that we present aliens is what the underlying idea of how we relate to them is. When I see the ones that have the hostiles, you know, like Independence Day
sure.
and stuff like that,
yeah.
where
it's
very
down,
much
just
a battle.
Setting the table for war.
Because I always think it's a really curious idea. People who believe that sort of if there are beings on other planets, they would be bent on annihilating us
right.
for kind of no reason. And I always feel like the place where that idea is born is that those are the people who think that's what we should do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When somebody is saying, like, this is how I think that person thinks.
Right.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
This is how I think aliens think.
Well, it's an incredibly xenophobic mindset.
Right. It's somebody saying, this is what I would do.
Right.
So it's what they sort of project on aliens that aliens do. So to me, the idea of the hostile alien is born of a very hostile attitude yourself
sure.
toward sort of what is external.
Immigrants, among other things.
Right.
What is external is to be battled and stuff like that.
Or what is in the way in a resource grab is to be annihilated.
Right, of course.
Sure. There's a jingoistic aspect to these, you know, Independence Days of mm-hmm. We all join together. I would argue that there's more positive things about humanity, about everybody joining together to fight these aliens, than in a lot of the so-called friendly aliens, where we have to hide this cute alien from humanity because humanity
is not ready,
is base,
like
fearful,
yeah.
grasping. There's a very anti-humanist message in things like E.T. where the government wants to come along and
Super 8 was the same way.
Yeah.
But that's a mainstay. I mean, that goes back, that precedes E.T. I mean, that is something, mm-hmm. you know, that's a basic premise of My Favorite Martian and mm-hmm. other shows of that time, which were essentially the same show.
Or Frankenstein.
Twilight Zone would do stuff like that, too.
Sure.
Although they also could have the hostiles as in To Serve Man.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about Twilight Zone and we talk about sort of the birth of science fiction and popular culture, such a big period in that was the same period as anti-communism and stuff like that. So I think for a lot of people,
when the communists were in space.
Exactly.
And so
they consider a lot of these stories.
Back,
space is very
fraught. It goes
back
much earlier than that. I mean, the first great you know, science fiction story is H.G. Wells, right?
That's what I'm saying. It's one of the periods of growth. I'm not saying it's the origin of
right.
these stories. I'm saying it's one of the times when you have a lot of these stories about hostile aliens.
In fact, I read something when I was poking around thinking about this today. H.G. Wells was inspired by a genre of literature that was called invasion lit, and it was novels and stories about a sleeping England being mm-hmm. invaded by some European country,
right.
often Germany.
Right.
and he sort of took that to another level.
I mean, I realize it sounds a little bit facile, but I do sort of think very little of what we write and create about aliens is really about aliens. Right. Just because our information is so limited, like such a blank slate. What you see with Alien is an exploitation, although it's about extraterrestrials. You're seeing exploitations of very base fear about your bodily integrity.
Fear of disease.
Fear right. of disease. Exactly. It's
but
fear
thing
of disease.
Especially also.
It's fear of disease. With Alien, it's fear of like bodily invasion. And yeah. without mm-hmm. and without giving anything away about Prometheus, that is certainly a continuing theme in Prometheus, is that real sort of eyeball stuff.
You know, it has cousins and like zombies, you know, where we've talked about things like werewolves Absolutely. And zombies and stuff like that. That zombies sort of have the, you know, it is your body, but you do not control it.
Right.
Yeah. That's a terrifying thing.
There's a big old trope in alien movies, you know, from Invasion of the Body Snatchers and sure.
right.
you know, many others.
Absolutely. And I think that's another kind of alien that I wanted to mention, is the idea of the alien that you can't tell is an alien. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of these aliens are sort of the humanoid, the thing that has the big head or the tail or the ET fingers or whatever.
Right.
But there's another entire kind of alien, including, frankly, Superman. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, right. No, absolutely.
Where you can't actually tell that it's an alien. V is the same way.
This is
right. yeah. It's an alien sort
Often
of hiding
in
plain
well,
sight. Yeah.
And talk about a xenophobic mindset.
Right.
You know,
right.
that now we should be afraid of ourselves. I mean, I think, you know, I think it was Glenn made a very interesting point earlier. You know, I was talking about how I kind of favor the touchy-feely view of aliens. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when you have touchy-feely aliens, it really is almost always in the service of the enemy is actually us.
Right.
We're the aliens.
Right.
We're the bad guys.
Right. So it's not touchy-feely toward humans.
Right. And so, and something like, and right, as Glenn was saying, something like Independence Day actually tries at least to entertain the notion that the entire world should be more united against this common enemy.
I mean, fundamentally, most alien movies present some kind of a great battle. And if the aliens are going to be good, then in the great battle, the humans have to be bad. Yeah. Whereas if you're going to take it as good versus bad, then at least where the aliens are hostiles, the humans can be friendly.
Well, Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End is a novel which goes to what you were talking about before, how you can't really tell the I'm not going to spoil the story, but basically mysterious spaceships hover over alien cities years, decades before Independence mm-hmm. Day. It seems like they're good, but then ultimately, let me just say, things come out in the wash. They do a lot mm-hmm. of good for humanity, and then they do a lot of bad for humanity.
Yeah.
And confronting that mystery is something that these stories do really well.
Yeah. One of the visions of aliens that I tend to like a lot is actually Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because they're not all the same. Mm. I like the idea of creating a situation where some are bureaucrats, some are like friendly little guys like Ewoks, some of them are big monsters like Jabba the Hutt, and I like to think that we will all one day retire to the Star Wars cantina.
Sure.
I think to come up with, you know, a very current example also of that is Men in Black.
Yeah.
That some of the aliens
in
Men in Black
right.
are sort of among us, and they're fine, and they're good, and they're good guys, but then there's this certain strain.
Right.
You know, some are unruly, and some are downright diabolical.
Right.
And,
In the late 80s, three films came out round about the same time. I was an usher in the Southampton, New York theater, and as I was ushering, these three films came out. One was Earth Girls Are Easy.
Oh, yeah.
Let's give Jeff Goldblum an opportunity to be more weird on screen.
Right. Let's paint him blue and give him fur.
My stepmother is an alien. You know, a minor addition to the Aykroyd.
If you say so.
And Alien Nation. Do you remember this film? Mandy Patinkin as an alien, James Caan, and some curdled milk.
Does that have a TV
spinoff? I mixed that one up with Enemy Mine.
Alien Nation have a TV spinoff?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
On one sense, it's a pretty ham-fisted way to tackle prejudice and immigration. But it was actually, I really remember liking that film a lot. It was really, really good. And I don't remember where I was going here. Except that
there
was a good movie.
That
was a good movie.
Well, and I will say one that we just very briefly touched on that I also thought was very effective was District 9. Because in District 9, you have really that idea that any group of people, right, placed in a situation where they are viciously oppressed and segregated and treated horribly, eventually attempt to sort of free themselves and become hostile in a way that perhaps they wouldn't have been had they been allowed to exist in peace.
Had we just behaved ourselves?
Well,
as humans.
I mean, some people believe that. Some people don't believe that about humanity and the way politics works and stuff like that. What I admired about it was sort of one of the more straightforward ways in which they sort of acknowledge stuff about aliens is not about aliens. It's always about something
It's always
else.
About public policy.
It's not always about public policy, but I think it is almost always about your view of the other, you know, to go back to Oberlin for a moment, sort of your view of the other, because when you think about, you know, there are so many different ways to think about it. Like we said, some are somebody that looks like you, but actually terrifyingly isn't like you. Mm-hmm. Some are people like Superman who look like you, but are actually greater than you. Mm-hmm. Some are people who terrify the heck out of you, but turn out to be
benign.
Some of them scare you and you turn out to be right. You can take the attitude where you try to be helpful and that goes horribly wrong. There are so many different ways to look at it, but it is, I think, always... You know, there's a reason why the word alien sort of is applied in multiple contexts.
Yes, indeed. Two things. Linda mentioned V, and Glenn mentioned a spate of alien movies in the late 80s. Neither of you mentioned the classic 1988 flick from John Carpenter, They Live.
Sure.
In which fits in that category of aliens disguised as people who want to help you but really want to eat you. They come disguised as yuppies.
Of the late 80s.
The great scourge of the 80s.
Right.
Giant shoulder pads.
Right. Well, and also, yeah. I mean, don't forget another one from the 1980s, you know, disguised as sort of a lovable wisecracker, but actually is there to eat your cat.
Right.
Oh,
Alf.
True that. Alf. That's right. Yes,
and,
indeed.
No problem.
And we, wow.
Nice.
Stephen busts out the Alf after almost 2 years of doing this
Finger
show.
On the pulse.
And we should also mention, of course, Third Rock from the Sun.
Sure. Yes.
And that's always been, I think, television, you know, although it certainly has dabbled in your dramas of different kinds about hostile aliens and sort of action settings, it has always had a real weakness for these, like Glenn mentioned, My Favorite Martian and Alf and, you know.
Mork from Mork.
And Mork. Mork, great one.
All of those shows, by the way, the same show. The same as I Dream of Jeannie and what's the other one?
Small Wonder.
It's, we have this amazing special thing that we must hide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Bureaucrats are poking around looking, you know, Mr. Ed.
That's how I treat Stephen.
So what happens if the aliens come and it's an anticlimax?
Like, they just show up and go to school.
They show up and we just get along with them.
They open a supermarket.
And nothing happens.
Well, that's kind of what District 9 was about. It's kind of what Alien Nation was about.
There's a short story in the February 2009 edition of The New Yorker that I came across.
I'll bet there is.
And it's called The Invasion from Outer Space. And it talks about the aliens come, and the aliens are these tiny little flecks of gold dust, and they just sort of settle over the entire planet and begin to replicate a little bit. Mm-hmm. But nothing dramatic happens. Mm-hmm. And the story is about sort of, what do you do if you've prepared for this eventuality or imagined this eventuality in all these sundry ways? And then it's just, wait, we thought this was going to be more dramatic.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great idea for a short story.
Oh, it is a great idea for a short story. It would not make much of a TV show.
Right.
In the sense that it's like, what if nothing happened? Great pitch.
Yep.
Cut, print.
It's a show about nothing.
It's a show about you have aliens. All right. You know, you can all go out and see Prometheus or see your favorite alien movie. And, of course, come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or at the blog at npr.org/PCHH. And tell us about your favorite aliens. I predict that we've left some out. I'm just going to guess.
We forgot Kang and Kodos.
I got this whole Cat from Outer Space chunk. But
I wrote down the Cat from Outer Space and didn't mention
Runny
it.
Runny Shell's Finest Hour.
Let's not forget K-Pax.
If you are right now thinking, I can't believe you forgot X, you want to come find us on Facebook or at the blog and tell us. All right, so we're going to move on from literal exploration to more figurative exploration. We all, as you know, have our set tastes. We have our things that, as you know, we like and dislike. But every now and then there is something that is a little bit out of our normal area that somehow is to our taste despite not being what we might normally perhaps think of as our taste. Glenn Weldon, give me an example.
I hate sports. Contain your shock. and the reason for that hate stems from a place of tremendous empathy. You know me. I'm a tremendously empathetic person. And I give forth love like water.
Hot boiling
from
water.
From a stone.
When I see a millionaire on the ballpark trying to catch a fly ball, I get a brown acid flashback to Glenn in fifth grade gym class.
Oh, yeah.
I did a lot of acid in fifth grade. I just get this feeling of dread, this pit of me back there in right field. I also, as we've talked about, I'm not crazy about the way sports are often packaged. There's a sentimentality that I don't respond to, especially with baseball. I was invited to a game a few years back at the Nationals baseball park. And Where they play the baseball, the ball of bases. And I was dreading it. Here's what they forgot to lead with. There's beer.
Yes.
There's lots
hot
of
dogs.
Beer. Yeah, hot dogs wouldn't have gotten me. But
You think that's not why other people like it?
Well, here's the thing. We went, sat down, started having some beer. It was a nice day. It wasn't too hot. There was
wasn't too hot.
Wasn't too hot. And all of a sudden, because I'm sitting behind home plate, I understand what a screwball does versus what a slider does. I can see it happening. It's always been this sort of esoteric things that people talk about.
You assumed it was all made up.
I just assumed you were making it up, yes. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy ahead of us in the rope and forest who had a radar gun. And he was writing down all kinds of stuff on sheaves of paper. And he would turn around every so often and say to me something in Sanskrit. I have no idea what he was saying to me. It was like gibberish with numbers, which is the worst kind of gibberish. I had no idea what he was saying. So I switched with my friend Paul, and Paul sat, who is a big baseball guy. And I got a chance to make fun of the headshots of the players. They're not headshots. You don't call them headshots, do you? It's like one of them
passing around 8x10.
That's right. This one with a cowboy hat. The one with a French beret. I don't know what they're called. But, you know, you just talk about who needed a stylist. And that was fun. This was actually a great thing. So I endorse going to see a baseball game, even if you hate sports.
I'm not a baseball guy at all. I mean, I put baseball in the category of sort of pool and golf and things that are only fun to play as opposed to
you
watch.
You are a bad person.
And I know that I'm a bad person. And I see Mike Katzif is just shaking his head angrily at me. I'm just not a baseball guy. But going to the ballpark is lovely.
The music could be improved.
That's true. That's true.
I don't care who let the dogs out. Thank you.
Well, that's true of many sports.
All right. I'm going to complain here because Glenn Weldon totally stole mine, because baseball is exactly what I was going to talk about, because going to the ballpark is a great thing. The only thing better...
45 seconds ago.
No, I did not. When you mentioned that I had forgotten this segment as we sat down to record, baseball is what I thought of. So I've been thinking of it for 12 minutes now.
Desperately at your iPhone to come up with an idea.
We give Trey a very hard time sometimes he makes it very easy.
It's a baseball thing.
But we love you. Go ahead.
The only thing better than going to the ballpark with a couple of friends and having some beers and watching the fellows in the tight pants is going on the annual Gay Day, the night out at Nationals Park, which basically turns the entire right-hand quadrant near the scoreboard into a gigantic open-air gay bar. Because you go to your seat, then you get up to get a beer, and you never see the people you came with again because you run into 1,000 people that you know. That's fun.
Well, you do.
Glenn's like, I do not truck with those people.
I'm not getting up out of my seat.
I would say...
There's beer here.
I'm staying in my seat where the beer is. I like that this, like, Bears fan is coming out in Glenn, like, as he talks about, right. Like, you know, like the Bears from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kind of coming out in Glenn. He's like, I'm not getting up. There's beer here. Stephen Thompson.
Baseball. No. I actually don't like baseball. Maybe that is my outlier.
I knew I couldn't trust you.
The sports that I love, I knew I could not trust you.
What is it? Is it the speed? What is it? But you're not.
It's the speed.
There's no cheerleaders.
Each sport sort of moves at its own pace, and the, you know, the extent to which you like to pay attention to things, I think, sort of.
Why do you hate mascots?
I like the idea of baseball.
Go ahead.
As the coach and captain of Team Onion Softball for 6 seasons, I enjoy playing it.
Well, tell us what your real one is.
All right. Well, I have realized recently that all I want to listen to in the car is the music of one of three people. Kelly Clarkson, Carly Rae Jepsen, and JoJo. Mm-hmm. I actually have a CD now in my car that has scrawled in Sharpie on it, JoJo Megamix. And Megamix is with two X's.
Sure.
Right.
And all it has on it is the song Too Little Too Late by JoJo. But I have talked about Too Little Too Late on the show before.
That's not much of a Megamix if all it has is that song.
It plays that song over and over again, and that's all I want. And the little part of the song where she goes, woo! It's amazing. If you know the song, you know what I'm talking about. I've been trying to figure out the chemistry of this. I actually tweeted about this over the weekend. The chemistry of Clarksonium versus Jepsenium. And Clarksonium is like defiant self-affirmation. Mm-hmm. And Jepsenium is like coy flirtation. Carly Rae Jepsen does the song Call Me Maybe, which mm-hmm. is currently, well, for months has been the YouTube
sensation. In contention for Song of the Summer.
As our former intern Chris Heller said to me the day that he first alerted me to its existence, it is a weapons-grade earworm.
Yep. It is a weapons-grade earworm. And you know it the instant you hear it. Mm-hmm. She was like a third-place finisher on Canadian Idol. Mm-hmm. Justin Bieber is the person who sort of launched her. Mm-hmm. The tweet heard round the pop universe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just love all that stuff. Anything Kelly Clarkson touches, I love.
And this is outside your wheelhouse, you think?
The only connection I feel like to my wheelhouse, and ordinarily I'm just one of those like mopey, you know, dudes, you know, with beards.
Beardy sad music.
There's a woman playing the cello behind it, and she's from Portland, and it's just this whole thing. But I think what it's consistent with that I love is this sort of separate school of, like, your Andrew W.K. I talked about Japandroids a couple weeks ago, that, you know, this just massively overdriven, like, rock anthems, just, like, chanting.
What's the other one? Fang Island.
Fang Island. You know, chanting about youth and, and, you know, and I think the similarity.
Chanting about youth as if to hang on to it forever.
Or to prepare the ritual sacrifice.
Well, where that is very often, particularly in your Japandroids, is, yeah, it's absolutely sort of fighting to hold on to vitality is very much a theme of all this stuff. And it's where it has the Springsteenium element, this periodic table. And I'm just imagining, yeah, the fusion of, like, you know, uppercase C, small L, uppercase J, lowercase E was Clarkso Jepsenium. You talk about weapons grade. That will destroy the earth.
Fission.
But anyway, I think there is a connection.
You have overthought this, sir.
But there's a connection.
I think I'm going to splinter a little Thompsonian when this is Thompsonium when this is all over.
But I think that, that what a lot of that music has in common is that if you imagine it playing, you know, on the, you know, on the stereo where it's like a mixing board and it gives you all the little levels as they flicker around, where all of those levels are pushed right up below red.
Right.
I like that.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad you could come clean about that, and I hope you feel better.
I do.
Well, as I started to think about this topic, I realized that most of the things that I think about as being, I don't usually like this, but, you know, I like this one, are things that already have elements of things I like. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like a lot of straight-up action movies, but I love Die Hard. But, of course, Die Hard has sort of elements of banter, which is very, very much something I like.
And also awesomeness.
I thought about Cabin in the Woods, which I really loved, even though it has elements of horror. But, of course, it also has elements of other things, satire and humor and things like that. So I often find that they're not quite as out of my wheelhouse as I think they are. But I will say one thing that I thought of was the novel Lush Life by Richard Price, which is sort of a real hard-boiled crime novel, which is really not the kind of thing I usually read. And I heard an audiobook read by Bobby Cannavale, and it's a really excellent, excellent performance of the novel. There are lots and lots of really cool, interesting voices for different characters, and I think that helped some. It's the kind of novel I just don't read a lot. I don't read a lot of sort of crime fiction, detective novels and stuff. But I loved that book. That book stayed with me for a long time. And I felt like even though it was not something that I would necessarily go out and say, oh, I'm going to find other, you know, I wasn't doing the, in my head, the Amazon more like this kind of thing. I just connected to that particular one.
Right. It's been a conversation in several magazine articles about the distinction between genre and non-genre. And we've talked about this on the show at Ad Infinitum. And the point that Lev Grossman made in an essay, kind of talking back to that conceit, is that good writing is good writing. Mm-hmm. And Richard Price is a classic example of a quote-unquote genre writer who is also a hell of a prose stylist, who really makes you want to read his stuff. Also can do a plot with a you know, that you could bounce a quarter off of.
Yeah.
But, man, you just want to keep reading that guy.
Yeah, I loved that book. And it's really, like I said, it's really not a genre that I read in very much at all. So that was mine, Lush Life by Richard Price. I recommend it. Give it a shot. Well, that brings us to our final segment of the show, which is, as always, what is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, I can't imagine what's making you happy this week.
When I hit send to the editor, and I was 2 days early, that was made me happy. But then I tweeted it because I just needed to tell everybody.
Yeah.
So I tweeted it, and I got a lot of really, really nice well wishes from people. That was great. And then I asked for recommendations of books and graphic novels and movies and music that has come out in the last 9 months when I have been in a cave. And I got a lot of really great recommendations that I'm already starting to download. I also, as soon as I got back home, I played a video game. I opened up Batman Arkham City, which is so good, you guys. Oh my God, it's so good. And, you know, I have a friend who didn't like the game because you approach a gang of thugs and you have all these different options and all these different buttons that you can press and combinations of buttons. And he was just like, it's too much. And you know who this game is not for? Dilettantes. Gadflies.
Yeah.
The casual gamer. I'm sure my Aunt Faye has the same complaint about this game. ask me who this game is for.
Who is it for?
The bold.
The bold.
Yeah.
Seriously, the beautiful.
Possibly.
The brave and the bold.
The brave and the bold. It's just so great. There's so much to do. And I started, you know, as soon as I got into it, I started going to the main quest, like, let me get through this game. And I was like, what the hell am I doing? I am going to spend some time just flying around, Gotham City. Just going from building to building, looking around. Oh, it's so good.
It's the same notion of the Atari game from 1983, E.T.
Oh, God.
Where you spend a lot of time just wandering and taking in open fields of nothingness.
Yes, right. So, Batman Arkham City is so good.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
With the news that I will be headed to New York City for about a week, possibly to cover the Tony Awards. We're still working out those plans. And then to spend the week after the Tony Awards seeing some theater, doing some interviews, maybe going to a benefit reading, which may or may not have Jan Maxwell participating.
Wow.
And a couple of other theater-related things, which I will tell you all about when I get back.
That is wonderful.
Quick question, Trey Graham. Mm. Whom do you favor? We're talking about the theater. Whom do you favor in the Tony Awards?
I am deeply, deeply split. Obviously, I favor once in every category it can get.
Which is a lot.
I am dying for Jan Maxwell to win a Tony, but I'm also dying for Audra McDonald to win her fifth Tony, which would put her in the rarefied category of people like Angela Lansbury and a couple of...
It's like rooting for Meryl Streep.
Yeah. I know, but...
You're rooting for the Yankees, exactly.
She's Audra McDonald.
I hope the Lakers can win it again.
I'm really super torn.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and I'm glad that that is making you happy this week, and I look forward to hearing all about it after you get back. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
Nerd lessons.
Oh, goodness.
I sat my beloved children down over the weekend and had them watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Excellent.
It was my 11-year-old son and my 8-year-old daughter's first exposure to the Monty Python universe. Results, you know, I mean, 70s comedy, the translation is a little tricky.
Sure.
70s comedy moves at a little bit of a different pace. But
I would also imagine there are passages in that movie that probably did not make a lot of sense
right.
to them.
They're not super up
Can
on
I have just a little of the peril.
Their knowledge of Arthurian mythology is not great, but by the time it got to the rabbit, they were, I think, pretty well sold. The other thing is, as I've discussed on this podcast before, I've been watching a lot of Futurama with the kids.
Yeah.
The kids pretty much just watch Futurama and got to the very, very last episode that they have aired, which is the best episode of that, arguably the best episode of that show, where they do each segment in a different animation style. Oh, Glenn.
Yeah, I've seen nothing.
Unbelievably hilarious. The first one is done in sort of Steamboat Willie style.
Oh.
The second one is done in early 80s video game style, complete with like Donkey Kong noises when they move around. The third one is done as an anime adventure, and it is just sort of mind-blowingly hilarious. And I realized, I'm like, oh, this is the last episode that they've done of this show, and it's like one of the best. How often does it happen that shows get funnier and funnier as they go along instead of kind of wheezing to a...
Especially when they've been off for a while.
Especially when they'd been off for as long as that show was off. And I went online, I'm like, I feel like that show's coming back soon. And the Wikipedia page for season 7 already has all the episode titles. And for the first, like, 13, who's written them? June 20th on the Cartoon Network, they're airing the first two episodes of what I guess they're technically calling season 7, even though it's, like, 13 and a half. Because that show has been taken away and put back and taken away and put back. Season 7 of Futurama, June 20th. Oh, I just can't.
Wonderful.
Can I get a footnote? Speaking of great shows coming back, there's a rumor circulating that Slings and Arrows may have a future life. Not definite. The creators talked about wanting to do it and dreaming about wanting to do it. So mobilize, people.
They never have to die, man. That's why you don't blow up the station, you know? You never know when they're going to come
back.
That's
why you don't break up the Barney Miller gang.
That's right.
All right. Well, making me happy this week, one thing is that Hell's Kitchen is back, which doesn't make me happy.
The risotto is not cooked!
It doesn't make me happy because of Hell's Kitchen as much as it makes me happy that Stephen and I will once again make the same jokes that we make every time this show is on, including the one that he just made, which is sort of perfect. And we also frequently discuss the fact that none of the people on the show are at all good at cooking.
Right. Which would ordinarily seem to be a prerequisite.
We will occasionally call each other donkeys. So basically, it just brings back a whole round of jokes so that I don't have to think of new ones.
Good.
That's really good
for that.
So I'm always happy to see Hell's Kitchen again.
See also The Bachelorette.
Right. See, well, don't. But the other thing that is legitimately making me happy this week is a show that I wrote about today on the blog, which is called Push Girls. And it's on the Sundance Channel. And it is about a group of four friends siblings who are women who use wheelchairs. And this is not the Real Housewives. They didn't put them together for the show. These are women who know each other, who have known each other a long time. Two of them are housemates. A bunch of them go back a long way. So because it's four women and they're all in wheelchairs, it's one of the only shows I've ever seen on TV where they actually define a person in a wheelchair beyond that fact.
Yeah.
Because since they all are, then all of a sudden you stop focusing as much on that. And you get sort of like, oh, this is the one who's kind of vain and cheesy and talks all the time about her sex life. And this is the one over here who's kind of like the mother figure to the other ones and is always worried about money. And she's the one that one of them is like her housemate and pays her rent and stuff like that. And then there's one who's kind of an ex-hip-hop dancer, and she's thinking about having a baby, but she's 42, so she's trying to figure out whether she really wants to have a baby. And so because they're all people who use wheelchairs, it stops being the television sort of like, this is our person in a wheelchair. Now, the interesting thing about it is it's still a reality show. So it's still a lot of people talking about who they're sleeping with and breaking up with boyfriends, and it's still the kind of thing that would bore a lot of people silly. My friend Alan Sepinwall was like, I didn't really care for it because it had a lot of reality tropes that I don't really like. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's the point. I was like, it's cool to me that they made this show where that's not the only thing these women are about. But at the same time, you get these opportunities to see like, oh, here's what it's like for her at this club where she goes up and down the stairs in her wheelchair because she can go down, you know, a few steps. And so you kind of see her like maneuvering down the steps like dunk, 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 dunk at this club. And it's kind of cool. Like you see a little bit more of life when you're sort of following people around, going on dates and going to work. And one of them is a model and she's trying to get back into modeling and has this experience where her leg is sort of, she develops spasms that she then has to kind of work out of her leg. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of interesting to see sort of how they go about their lives. And it both is and isn't about that. Right. I just think it's a really interesting show. Again, Push Girls, it's on Sundance Channel. Right now, the pilot episode is on Hulu. If you get the Sundance Channel, it's on Monday nights at 10 Eastern. And otherwise, I'm sure you'll be able to find it elsewhere. That show is making me happy this week. I always like it when reality does a little something good for the world. So that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. And one of our fans, whose birthday it is, asked whether Stephen would sing the song this week. In honor of his birthday, so I just want to...
Wait, hold on one second.
Steven just needs a little
Steven's going to hydrate.
Okay.
Trey with an even gram like the cracker.
Oh, I feel like it was my birthday.
I feel like my voice has gotten richer in tone.
That one is for you, buddy.
That's a timely precedent.
You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You may notice he has written a book. You can also follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which is making you happy right now. Thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.